Dance like a dad. It's a great way to make a moment with your kids.
First, I hold my hands out like they're on a steering wheel. Then I look over my shoulder. Next, I put it in reverse. Meep, meep, meep.
Visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking you questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance so common with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Kevin, thinking about retirement?
I've thought about it, but it's too late for me to save.
With Avo, a retirement coach, it's never too late.
Where can I learn more?
Visit aceyourretirement.org today.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! We got a lot going on today on a Friday. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show,
Michael Felder does analysis for Stadium Network, watchstadium.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at In The Bleachers. Back in 2017, what were people telling you and what were you seeing on film about Mitchell Trubisky?
So, even though I went to UNC, I was not super high on him. He's a guy that only started the year. And honestly, between the ACC and the competition that he went up against, and knowing that he didn't really, from a production standpoint, he wasn't better than Marquise was the year before. Keith was a better quarterback the year before. If you couldn't beat him out until this time, I just didn't feel like he had the juice. So it was interesting. And we did the draft show, and when they gave up as much as they gave up, that was the part that really was telling, because it did stack the deck against him, knowing how much they gave up to get him. But for me, watching him, there were tools that I liked. Would have liked to see him maybe even go back to school to refine some things. But at the end of the day, I was not crazy. I wasn't head over heels for him. I certainly wasn't top five over head over heels for him. And I wasn't even first round. But that was a year for me that I didn't think there were a lot of first round quarterbacks in general.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Had a great conversation with Michael Felder, and I actually have the video of it, and I'm gonna put that on the House of L YouTube page. You can watch the interview. It was great to talk to him about the Bears and the Bears draft class. Welcome in. I'm Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 2 o'clock. We got a crazy show today because we're gonna kind of go a little bit all over the place with the show. Jim Angio, the longtime director, is going to join us at 1 o'clock. Mark Grody is going to join us at 12:40 to talk about the Bears' couple of signings that they've made over the last 24 hours. But I'm really excited to talk to the guest that we have now to open up the show. Obviously, you've been watching the Last Dance documentary, and we got a glimpse of Tim Grover in that documentary towards the end of episodes 3 and 4. He's known for being a guy that has changed a lot of lives in the NBA. He's worked with the best, and he was nice enough to join us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline.
Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park. Their service bays are open. AlpamonteFord.com is where you can check them out. He is the author of Jump Attack. He is the author of Relentless, From Good to Unstoppable, the creator of the Relentless System, and UIC's finest. Tim Grover joining me now here on The Score. Hey, Tim.
Lawrence, how are you?
I'm doing really well. What's this been like for you to watch this documentary take place?
Well, you know, the first thing, anytime you said you're going to have a crazy show and I get to be a part of it, that's the best kind of shows. Well, those are the best kind of shows. Listen, the documentary has been, you know, a lot of the stuff, it's been like, it's kind of refreshed my memory on a lot of stuff that I just didn't remember, because so much happened during that time. So it's kind of a refresher course for me. It's like reliving it again. So yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. And it's bringing a lot to light, which I knew, but now everyone gets a chance to see.
Well, let's talk about what happens after the Bulls lose series to the Pistons, because that's kind of the flashpoint that that's when the Bulls decided that they were going to hit things hard. When you were dealing with Michael back then, what was the approach that he wanted? What did he want to get out of how they approached that next offseason?
Well, you know, it's just like what he said. He said, "Listen, I'm tired. I want to administer the pain." You know, he knew that not only himself, but everybody on the team had to come back physically and mentally stronger. They had to become more athletic. They had to become more resilient. And he knew if he set the tone, like, hey, listen, I'm the best player. I'm the leader of this team. I don't have to say this. I'm going to show you by example. And everybody got to see the work that he was putting in. And there was like, okay, if this guy who's already the best of the best is stepping up his game and doing the things beyond basketball to make himself better, we need to follow. So it was like making him, like adding a new layer of Teflon onto him to make his body even more bulletproof, to make it more resilient. Not only could he take the impact, but he could dish it out, because, you know, it wasn't like the Pistons were going to become less physical that year. It was only going to become more and more. So he was just like, all right, they're going to come back more physical. I'm going to come back stronger. And I need to be, in order to sustain this, I need to come back and remain injury free, just like the rest of the team has. So he set the tone early and everybody else followed.
Tim, for a guy that's built long, like MJ's a long guy, What were your goals to try and get that upper body to withstand the beating that he was going to take from Detroit?
Well, you know, it wasn't only the upper body. It was the lower body, too. You know, so what we did was, obviously, you know, in the jersey, it's much easier to see the change in his upper body. You know, back then he had the shorts that came all the way down, way past the knees. But it was not only to strengthen his upper body, make it less susceptible to injuries, but also, you know, most of the lower body you have injuries that come with the lower body, and somebody who's athletic as he is. So everything was also to balance the lower body out, to make sure, to minimize ankle sprains, to minimize tendonitis in the knee, to minimize hamstring injuries, and also make him more explosive while doing all those things. So it was a complete overhaul of his body. And we would push him to the point where, Michael, you have to let us know where you feel comfortable at, because, you know, we're still developing a great basketball player, an athlete. We're not making somebody into a power lifter. And so you can make an athlete too strong, or you can make an athlete too flexible. Right, and those are the concepts that, you know, I had to kind of explain to him. You need to know where you feel comfortable at. You need to tell me how far we want to take this, where you can adapt it to your basketball game, because what you do in the weight room has to translate to what you do in your sport. So you can go ahead, just because you can bench press 300 pounds doesn't teach you how to translate it to your particular sport. There's weight room strength, there's sports strength, and there's learning to combine the two.
Talking with world-renowned trainer Tim Grover here on The Score, I saw you talk about I love this concept, and I hope that you can explain it for the person that's listening in their car or at home. You brought up the idea of everyone teaches you how to go, and your thing is, I also want to be able to teach you how to stop. What does that mean?
So what we do, so athletes now, and this is a trend that's been going on for years, and I just don't understand why it hasn't been addressed yet, or it's starting to get addressed more, but everybody looks at an athlete and they want them to jump higher. They want them to be able to lift more. They want them to be able to run faster. All right. Well, if you can do all those things, you also have to teach the body to be able to stop those things. So if you can jump higher, you need to teach the body how to land. That's going to minimize the impact. If you're going to be able to run faster, you need to be able to teach the body how to stop and change directions. So there's muscles that teach you how to go, and there's muscles that teach you how to stop, and they have to work congruently with each other. And most people only work on the fast, because everything now is, all the metrics and all the analytics and everything is about how fast somebody can do something, how fast a person can do this. All right. You got to be able to, the faster you get, the quicker you have to be able to stop. It becomes more and more important. So that was something we really addressed with Michael, because he had no problem going, that was not an issue. But early in his career, the muscles that needed for him to stop, those weren't in balance with the muscles that needed to go. So that was something that we addressed, and I've done it with all my athletes.
How important do you think was your background of playing ball at UIC with building your relationship with Michael?
Well, obviously I had a somewhat of a knowledge of the game, but not to the level that he had it. The coaches had it. It wasn't there, but I did understand more of it. And then when he explained stuff, I was able to understand what he was saying. When he was like, okay, this is how the triangles run. This is the offense that Doug is running. This is what Phil's running. These are the steps I have to go. This is where I have to cut. So I was able to pick those nuances up. I wouldn't tell him, hey, this is what you need to do on the basketball court. His expertise is way greater than mine is on that. But having a knowledge of the fundamentals of basketball, playing at a mid-major, understanding what the coach is wanting, understanding what a collegiate practice was like, what the recovery was, and also my study was also – my master's is in exercise science. So not only did I get a chance to play, but I also studied it. So with the combination of those two things, it made Michael's level of comfort with me even greater.
I heard the story about you getting Michael, and it makes sense that you created a relentless system and have a book called Relentless, which I'll get to momentarily. But for those who don't know the story, how were you able to become Michael Jordan's trainer? And what steps did you take? I heard handwritten letters. Is that right?
Yes. First of all, you got to prepare yourself for the opportunity. So I always knew, listen, I understood early that I was not going to make any money playing basketball. For me to play at a mid-major college at Division I level, I had to outwork everybody just to get to that level. So having that understanding that this is the next level is just not feasible for me. Yeah, maybe I could have gone overseas, but overseas was not as prevalent as it was. And the t- So that wasn't even a consideration. But I knew I wanted to. I said, okay, if I'm not good enough, I still want to be involved in sports. I want to train professional athletes. So what I did was, you know, I took a job at a local health club just because you have all this knowledge in your head, but my college didn't teach me the practical part to put it into action. So I took a job at a local health club and started working with, you know, everyday athletes, tennis players, racquetball players, basketball, track and field, whatever came into the health club. So I can really hone in on my craft. And then I saw a small article in a local newspaper that said Michael Jordan's tired of taking the physicality and the abuse from the Detroit Pistons and he's looking to get stronger. I said, okay. In my mind, I'm like, all right, he's probably the team's already got somebody working with him. So what I did was I wrote 14 letters. Lily Hand wrote 14 letters to all the different players in the Chicago Bulls organization. The one player I did not write a letter to was Michael Jordan. All right. So I get a response back, you know, a couple of weeks later, I get a response back from the athletic trainer, Mark File, and the team physician at the time, which was Dr. John Heffron. And they said, hey, one of the players saw your letter and he told us to follow up with you. So that's, this thing went on for like 3 months. Well, they kept asking questions, my philosophies. It was like taking an entrance exam to get back into medical school or get into a law firm or whatever it was. I was like, I kept answering them, and then one day they called me up and said, "Hey, listen, we want you to meet the client at his house. Be here after practice." I still didn't know who they were talking about. I still didn't know. So after practice, I go to the house, and this was back when you could just walk up to his house. I rang the doorbell. Guy opens up the door. It was Michael Jordan.
That's crazy. So, TimGrover.com. If you want to learn a little bit more about Tim's system and check out his book, Relentless, From Good to Great to Unstoppable. If someone picks up that book, they order it on Amazon today, they get it this weekend, what can they expect?
Listen, so it's a mindset book. It's a training book for your mind. So what I was fortunate and blessed to do is work around some of the greatest competitors of our time. You know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, and being around these individuals, I had access to other individuals. You know, I had access to be around individuals like Muhammad Ali. I had access to be around Wayne Gretzky. I had access to be around Roger Federer. You know, these great, Pete Sampras, anybody who was exceptional in their sports, you know, the Derek Jeters, all these individuals. And they were all great in their sports, but one thing they all, that was so common among them, is the way they thought. And it was funny, I always said, if you were to go into a room and you were to give gave everybody the same voice, where everybody was monotone, and you asked the question, and asked whatever question it was, they would tell you the exact same answer. The mindset of these individuals is historic. And that's what the book is about. It's not about being able, it's not going to teach you how to be to be a basketball player like Michael Jordan. People in the NBA are never going to be basketball players like Michael Jordan. But we can all have that mindset to accomplish the greatest things of whatever you want to do. The roadblocks that come in, how to deal with those things. This is not a rah-rah book. It's not a make-you-feel-good book where you pat yourself on the back and everybody tells you got to want it and let's go. You got to know where you're going. And this book tells you how to figure out where you want to go.
You were really close with Kobe Bryant. So how hard have the last 3 months been for you with his passing?
You know what? It's been extremely difficult because every time I see – you know, this week's Sunday, the episodes, you know, is one of the focuses on one of the episodes is going to be about Kobe. So I see those things and it's still hard for me to believe that he's gone. You know, you just like, it's like, are you ever going to wake up? Are you ever going to wake up out of this? You know, you're going to get a phone call and just say, hey, man, it's me. And the crazy part about this whole thing is we were supposed to we had plans to get together during All-Star break.
Here in Chicago?
Yes, here in Chicago.